Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. I've said this the last couple of weeks, but we are possessive. He joins us weekly. The films Candyman, The Night House, and Coda. Sounds varied, is it?
Well, it is to some extent, yeah. It seems like almost every week I say to you, well, Jill, I know you're not all that high on horror films, but I kind of like them, and I have one or two this week. You know, this has just turned out to be such a blockbuster year for horror movies, and I'm not saying they're all good, far from it. But there sure are a lot of them. And as I've said before, I don't think it's because we're in a pandemic year and people are traumatized and all of that, although that's true, because it takes a while to get movies into production and through the pipeline and onto the screen. So most, if not all, of these movies were in production before the pandemic really hit. But now they're out, and there just do seem to be a lot of them. I got two of them this week, Candyman and The Night House, both of which has just opened. And then our third movie, Coda, is a very, very different thing. And then we'll get all sweet to wrap things up for today. So let's start out with Candyman. Candyman is actually a sort of a sequel or remake. They're calling it a sequel to a movie that came out of very many years ago, a movie that came out way back in the 90s, the early 90s, by a director named Bernard Rose. And it was an interesting horror movie, very ambitious in some respects. And the new version of Candyman, which among the people who were involved in making it was Jordan Peele, who's become quite an important black media personality these days. The new version is a very interesting variation on the earlier version, even though it's basically the same story. Now, Candyman is based on a story by the horror writer Clive Barker called The Forbidden. And it's interesting that the story has so little in common. I mean, it's got some things in common with the movies, but one major ingredient in the movies really doesn't figure in the original story at all, namely the idea, this sort of urban legend type thing, where if you gaze into a mirror and you say the name Candyman five times, Candyman, who is a horrific monster, will appear and do something horrific to you. So that's one of the basic premises behind both of the movies. And the earlier version of Candyman, which came out again in the early 90s, is by a British director, and it has a lot of very, very uncomfortable racial elements to it. It takes place in Chicago in basically a housing project. When the movie came out, some of its racial aspects were discussed. I don't think as sensitively as they perhaps should have been. But, you know, basically we have here a movie where the racial dynamics are fairly complicated, but ultimately Candyman is a very black monster, horrifying creature, and the main victim of that movie is a white woman. So I think that it has a certain sort of racial bias just built right into it. Made me a bit uncomfortable. I watched it again recently, and I think it's a very questionable movie. Now, again, the new Candyman, which was, again, partly, you know, co-written by Jordan Peele and directed by Nia DaCosta, very much goes out of its way to correct these sorts of elements of the earlier Candyman, I think. It still takes place in Chicago. And it still takes place in basically a housing project, which has now been gentrified. And it deals again with issues of racial equity and class equity and things like that. But we now have a movie where most of the major characters are black, and we don't have the case of a white woman being menaced by a black monster and so forth. Now we have black people being menaced by a black monster. So it's kind of different. But the most important thing to say about the new Candyman is that it really is a kind of a racial allegory in a way. It's very much about the kind of horror that emerges when people have to live in areas that were or perhaps still are plagued by memories or actualities of horrifying racial injustice. And I think that's very much what the filmmakers wanted to get after. Again, it was co-written by Jordan Peele and Wynne Rosenfeld and Nia DaCosta. Acosta, who directed it. And I really think that they wanted to get the racial elements of this movie front and center and even them out a lot from the way they were in the earlier version that came out back in the early 90s. It's a very interesting movie. I didn't like a lot of the acting very much, but the visuals are pretty powerful. One interesting thing that Candyman has is a lot of use of sort of shadow puppets, little silhouettes that actually act out parts of the story. This may have been done partly for budget reasons, because then you don't have to fully stage these things, but I found it very effective, and it gives the movie a lot of visual variety. And don't leave when the end credits start, because that's when you have some of the most elaborate and beautiful of these little shadow puppet silhouettes, which I found the best part of the movie. So again, a very interesting movie, a movie to give you a lot to think about in terms of today's racial discussions and racial discourses and racial dynamics. And I didn't find it an enjoyable movie to watch, but it's a pretty interesting horror movie and a very thoughtful horror movie. Whether it's fully successful or not is another story, but again, it really wants to provoke thought, and I think it does that effectively. Our second movie for today is called The Night House, and it was directed by David Bruckner, who is kind of a horror specialist. And it is about a young woman whose husband, we learned this early in the movie, so this is not really a spoiler, her husband recently committed suicide, much to her shock and horror. She is a teacher, her husband was an architect, he personally built the beautiful house in which they lived and in which she still lives now, and that house is what the title refers to, the Night House. It's a big, beautiful house, and it's also a very mysterious house in a lot of ways. So after her husband's suicide, our main character, whose name is Beth, and she is played, by the way, by Rebecca Hall in a marvelous, spectacular performance, not a showy performance, but a very subtle and interesting one that's just a pleasure to watch throughout the movie. Beth is now living in this house after her husband of 14 years has killed himself, and she kind of is just not happy. She was depressed, had depressive tendencies before her husband committed suicide. Now they've sort of taken over. And so she spends her time sort of walking about the house and drinking brandy and talking with her best friend from time to time and discovering things. Of course, a movie like this, the main character is going to discover things. This is a horror movie after all. So she finds a suicide note from her husband, and it's very peculiar. She looks at his phone, and she finds a picture of herself in a place that she doesn't recognize, sort of surrounded by bookshelves. And the more she looks at it, the more she realizes that this photo on her husband's phone is not a picture of her. It's a picture of someone who looks very much like her. So what's going on here? Also, she starts, again, her husband built this home, which she is still living in, and she starts to find his architectural designs, and they're very strange. They're very peculiar. They seem to change the layout of the house into a different shape, sort of a mirror image of the actual house itself. So what is going on here? Then she starts going out into the woods near the house and walking around, where, by the way, she runs into a neighbor of theirs, played wonderfully by Vondi Curtis Hall. And she finds that there is a sort of a mirror image of her house being built out in the middle of the woods, incomplete. So what's going on there? Was her husband doing that? What happened? Then she starts to find out other things, and the sorts of things that you might expect from a horror movie. Her husband, it turns out, had dark urges about which he was very distressed, and was maybe that's why he killed himself, maybe to get away from these dark urges of his. So all of this comes together. It sounds sort of complicated. The movie is actually very linear, very easy to follow, right along until you get it to the last part. And a lot of people have been commenting on this. The very end of The Night House, it's just sort of hard to figure out. I won't say it's confusing, because I don't think I was confused. I think the movie gets a bit confused. That said, what The Night House is really about more than anything else is atmosphere. And the best horror movies, what they're really about more than anything else is atmosphere. And The Night House has this very dark, gloomy, scary mood throughout it, which is really, really very, very effective, and it certainly took me in. I found the first half of The Night House to be truly excellent, one of the best horror movies in years. Then it starts to get a little bit formulaic, it starts to sort of get a little bit ordinary, and then again, the very ending of it it just doesn't really come together, and it's really questionable whether even if you sat down and made charts, you could really make sense out of the whole thing. But again, what The Night House is really about is mood, and it's also very very much about Rebecca Hall's terrific performance. She is a terrific actor, and this movie really, really showcases her talents in a lot of ways. It has a lot of jump scares in it, too. I should mention that. So if you like movies that sort of do what the dentist does to you once in a while, sort of makes you jump up and say, oh, what happened there? Then this movie is for you also. So it's a film with a lot of mood, a lot of atmosphere, a lot of quietness, and then every once in a while something which makes you sort of leap up out of your chair a little bit, and I found it pretty effective in that way as well. So again, The Night House, not a great horror movie, but a good horror movie. The same goes for Candyman. Not sensational movies, but movies that accomplish what they set out to do, which is, you know, pretty much what we can ask from a movie. And as I promised Jill, our final movie today, Coda, it's our sweet movie for the day. It's not a horror movie at all. It was directed by Sean Hedder, and it is a movie where the title has basically a couple of meanings, coda. First of all, a coda is part of a piece of music. It's a little tailpiece on the end. It's a little extra bit at the end of some pieces of music, some serious symphonic music, for example. And even though there is not really a coda to any of the music in the movie Coda, the movie is very, very much about music. Coda has another meaning as well, which very much figures into this movie. CODA stands for Child of Deaf Adults, and that is what our main character is in this film. Her name is Ruby, and she is the only person in her immediate family who can hear. Both of her parents and her older brother are all deaf. So, okay, that's her predicament in life, but she loves her family and they seem to get along pretty well. The business that the family is in, they have a fishing boat. They go out not the mother, she stays home and looks after the house, but the two siblings and the father go out on the fishing boat every day, and they catch a lot of fish, and then they come back to shore and they sell the fish to a dealer who then retails the fish out. So that's what they do. However, Ruby has more to her life than just going out on the family fishing boat. She also is going to high school, she's getting near the end, and she's always loved singing. She wants to be a singer if she possibly could. It takes her a little while to get up the courage to actually try out for the high school music teacher, but he not only agrees that she should maybe be a singer, he feels that she has some real talent and that she really ought to go into this and maybe even go off to a music college eventually. Now, this does not sit so well with the other members of her family. For one thing, there's the family fishing boat. If she, in addition to going to high school, is now going to be trying to become a singer and get into college and do all of that, she's not going to be able to help out on the family fishing boat, and she's kind of an indispensable member of the team because she's the only one who can hear, and that leads to a very dramatic development later on in the movie. Also, the mother particularly is rather resentful. Why would her daughter, who can hear, want to be a singer? As the mother says at one point, if we were all blind, would you want to be a painter? There's a certain amount of ill feeling about this. So this adds up to some very interesting psychological dynamics in the movie. And what we do is, over the course of the movie Coda, is we watch Ruby make progress. She does start to sing. She starts to get lessons from her music teacher, but she's also balancing this with ordinary high school life, with working on the family fishing boat, with a crisis that the family runs into regarding their fishing boat, which only she can help out with the music teacher becoming more and more upset that she is not always on time, she doesn't always have time to work on her music, etc., etc., etc. And all of this leads up to, yes, what we might call a coda to the movie, the very end of the movie, which I won't say how things turn out, but it's a very upbeat and positive outcome that reflects well on all concerned, I must say. What's nice about Coda is that, well, first of all, it's beautifully acted, and I have to say, the best-known member of the cast is Marley Martin, who became famous many, many years ago as one of the very rare deaf stars in American film, and she gives a wonderful performance as the mother. The other members of the family are beautifully played, and Emilia Jones as Ruby Rossi, the one who can hear and speak, is just terrific. She gives an excellent, excellent performance, and she just stands out. She sings very nicely, not showily, but very nicely, and she is a good actor, and everybody in the movie is very nice. I didn't like everything about Coda. The parents, for example, example, are meant to be all over-sexed. And there's some sex jokes in the movie that I just found kind of vulgar, and they just didn't really work for me. And they kind of interfere with the overall sort of gentle, sweet mood of the movie. But that's just a little bit of a complaint from me. I'm sure that many people will find that another charming aspect of the movie. Coda is a remake of a French movie, interestingly, it's very, very American. It takes place mostly in Gloucester, Massachusetts. The ending takes place in Boston, old stomping grounds for me, which I like very much, and I really enjoy the atmosphere of this movie in that respect. It has a good geographical feel to it. You really get a sense of what it's like to work on a fishing boat, and above all, you see this wonderful performance from this young actor named Emilia Jones, who sings and acts and talks and does everything she needs to do as the central character of this very sweet, upbeat musical movie. I recommend it. And so that is my partly horrific, partly sweet, I hope, story this week, Joe.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films Candyman, The Night House, and Coda.